Good evening, Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Yeah, I've decided to change the opening hour music. Sitting at the Wheel, it's a grand old Moody Blues song. I like it. So we're going to retire Run Like Hell for a while. Okay. All right. Welcome to tonight's program. It's about 7 past the hour. Hope you had a good weekend. I spent part of mine flying back from Chicago, or from San Francisco. Got Chicago on my mind. I'll tell you why. Because of their lost attempt to get the Olympics. You know, I'll tell you something. Krugman's column today, The Politics of Spite, really hit it on the head for me. We have a party in this country. We have a group of people in this country who truly hate America. And will do anything to see America fail. Because if America fails, that means Obama fails, and that means they have a better chance of winning elections next year. I've never seen anything like this. These people are so full of spite. Krugman writes about what happened when the IOC, International Olympic Committee, rejected Chicago's bid to be the host of the 2016 Olympic Games. Do the dumbass people who hate this country realize this is only 2009? That's 7 years from now? But because the Olympic Committee said no, they cheered. According to a blog post by a member of the Weekly Standard, cheers erupted at the headquarters of that filthy rag. They had a headline at the Weekly Standard online: "Obama loses, Obama loses." Limbaugh declared himself gleeful. The Drudge Report, front page, world rejects Obama, and so on. This is just getting worse and worse, isn't it? I wish these people would leave. I wish they'd all go away. I wish they would get terribly, terribly sick. These are the teabaggers. I'd like to see them all get terribly sick and have their insurance canceled. And then have them beg and plead and whine. Go to emergency rooms, folks. I really do. I've gotten to that point. Just like the homeowners here in the suburbs of Atlanta a couple, 3 weeks ago when the floods came. Out in Cobb County, most notably. A county that hosts teabagger rallies and pigs like these right-wing talk show hosts and talk about communism and socialism. They don't want anything to do with Obama, anything to do with the federal government. And then as soon as their basements are flooded and their homes are ruined and all their furniture is destroyed and the drywall inside their houses is covered with black mold, which means it's full of toxic disease-producing substances, and they don't have flood insurance, where do they go? They go to rallies where Joe Biden and that communist FEMA run by that socialist Nazi, Barack Obama, are holding meetings. And they have their hands out and their wallets open to the very people that they just pissed on with their rhetoric and their ugliness and their spite and their hatred, because Barack Obama is a black man. That's it. So, to all you people at the Weekly Standard, eventually your magazine will collapse and you're going to lose your health insurance. And the imp inside of me hopes that one or all of you get desperately ill. Maybe you need a kidney transplant. Maybe you come down with lupus. Maybe you develop breast cancer. Maybe you develop testicular cancer or colon cancer or pneumonia. And all of a sudden, your health insurance company says, nah, I'm sorry, goodbye. Or you don't even have it anymore because this rag, the Weekly Standard, goes down the commode. I'm embarrassed. My Baptist grandmother would just be furious with me for saying this. I hope you suffer. I hope you suffer so hard. I hope your family cries. I hope you lose everything. How dare you? How dare you dump your juvenile spite on this country. How dare you? As Krugman writes, what did we learn from this? Obama loses! Yay! America doesn't get it! Ha 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 ha! What do we learn from that? For one thing, as Krugman writes, we learn that the modern conservative movement, which dominates the modern Republican Party, has the emotional maturity of a bratty 13-year-old. I think that's a little bit too high, Mr. Krugman, but I'll go with 13. More important, he writes, the episode illustrated an essential truth about the state of American politics. At this point, the guiding principle for one of our nation's two great political parties is spite, pure and simple. If Republicans think something might be good for the president, they're against it, even or whether or not it's good for America. And Krugman goes on and on. One of the questions he asks, how did one of our great political parties become so ruthless? He says the key point is that ever since the Reagan years, the Republican Party has been dominated by radicals, ideologues, and or apparatchiks who at a fundamental level do not accept anyone else's right to govern. Anyone surprised, Krugman writes, at the venomous, over-the-top opposition Mr. Obama must have forgotten the Clinton years? Yeah, remember that? Remember when Rush Limbaugh suggested Hillary Clinton was a party to murder? Remember when that piggish Newt Gingrich shut down the federal government in an attempt to bully Clinton into accepting Medicare cuts? Remember the impeachment saga? Krugman writes, the only difference now is that the GOP is in a weaker position, having lost control not just to Congress, but to a large extent of the terms of debate. The public no longer buys conservative ideology the way it used to. The old attacks on big government and peons, poems to the magic of the marketplace have lost their resonance. Yet conservatives retain their belief that they and only they should govern. The result has been a cynical ends justify the means approach, hastening the day when the rightful governing party returns to power is all that matters. So the Republicans will seize any club at hand with which to beat the current administration. It's an ugly picture, but it's a truth. And it's a truth anyone trying to find solutions to America's real problems has to understand. Paul Krugman in today's New York Times. That is so true. They hate America. They hate themselves. They project it out onto the rest of us. Thank God they are a dying political party. Thank God they are irrelevant insofar as legislation is concerned. The real culprits are not these gas bags and lunatics on right-wing radio and television. The real culprits are the Blue Dog Democrats. The ones who owe their very souls to the pharmaceutical industrial complex, the medical industrial complex. Those are the culprits. The Republicans are irrelevant. They have absolutely nothing to do with any of this. And their gas bags on radio and television have nothing to do with it either. They fart over the airwaves all day long, and it makes some people sick, and other people inhale the fumes and love it. But the real culprits are the Democrats, the Blue Dog Democrats, the so-called conservative Democrats in Congress, who sit on their asses while there are people struggling to bring health reform to this country. You know what? I hope you people, well, of course, you people are immune. You people in Congress, you have the greatest health care plan in the history of the human race. What the hell do you care, right? The day will come, though, you know, saying in the South, every dog has its day. I don't know what the hell that means, but there is a day of reckoning for you people. There really is. Cheering and applauding and high-fiving each other because the United States did not get the Olympics. You disgusting pricks. This portion of the Mike Malloy program is brought to you by It's Up to Us Alone, featuring Ed Asner. Go to usalone.com for information on where to hear the debut of this dramatic new radio play in your area. Past the hour, Malachi in Saskatoon says one good thing has come out of the Chicago losing out the Olympics and the cheering by the right-wingers. No longer can they say that they're more patriotic than the political left. Whenever they trot out, they love America, that they love America, and left-wingers hate America, all I have to do is show them the videos cheering Chicago's loss. Yeah. And Ron writes, Republicans are like the guys in the hull of a sinking ship who keep pulling the people ahead of them off the ladder. Yeah. They're pretty disgusting. They really are. And an email here from Half a Rock. Half a Rock. Is there a joke in there? Half a Rock. Dear Mike, I've been away from civilization for a while, but I've been listening in on your show. This may be a bit late, but the conservative nuts having their little tizzy fits at the town hall meetings got me to remembering your reading of Orwell's 1984 sometime back. Right away it came to me, yet I've been surprised that I've yet to hear anyone make the connection. Replace Barack Obama with Emmanuel Goldstein and the shouting of the right-wing nuts with the two-minute hate, and it all makes sense. Along this line, I also recently had a run-in of sorts with a police officer. He was complaining about the fact that his portion of his health care insurance was about to go up from its present $400 a month, among other things. When I pointed out that a single-payer system would solve his problems, he launched into something that sounded oddly a little like Glenn Beck, complaining about the USSR socialism and going on to ask me to name one thing that the government has ever run that worked. I began, well, the post office, water department, parks, libraries, the police. The police bit got him to thinking, and he quickly backed off, as if he suddenly came to the realization that he'd been misled. In any case, it took his mind away from the ticket that he was going to write my girlfriend. Half a Rock. Well. Obama. And by the way, you know, I'll bring it up again. I think any fool who thinks that Barack Obama went to, Copenhagen for the IOC meeting. Lost my train of thought there for a second. I think it's a pretty naive way of thinking. I really do. This president, I maintain this. I said this last Friday, I think, and I believe it's still true. This president is not stupid. He may be naive in his reaching out to these right-wing devils, but he's not stupid. The reason he went to Copenhagen was to have, I think he was summoned by General Stanley McChrystal. And I hate to say that, because better that he should have been there to pitch Chicago. But there's something very strange going on with the U.S. military and this president and what's going to happen in Afghanistan. Matter of fact, I got an email tonight. I'm going to leave the person's name completely off of this. But the person writes, as an aside, I worked for the Air Force for 6 years and the Army for 24 years. And I can assure you the most critical and frightening thing about this whole fiasco is that McChrystal wasn't fired immediately the first time he opened his mouth. When you consider his background in special ops and assassination rings, it's obvious that he's a so-called lone wolf, a rogue general with the power to make all decisions on who to kill and when and how to kill them. However, the man behind the curtain here is Secretary of Defense Robert Gates, who manages to stir up confusion by being for more troops one day and not for them the next. You don't want to consider his background unless you're sitting down. We are witnessing an attempted coup here, and it goes beyond McChrystal and Gates. If Obama doesn't know it, and how could he not, he will have a rude awakening if he challenges those who are playing the great Caspian game. I'll leave the identity of the emailer completely anonymous. It's the second person whose opinions I respect who have said off the record something along those lines. Anyway, back here in the non-threatening real world, the president will speak to a gathering of gay rights activists this weekend. That's the day before. Thousands of people are expected to march on Washington. It's a demonstration calling for greater legal protection for gays, lesbians, and transgendered Americans. Obama's going to show up Saturday at the annual dinner for the Human Rights Campaign. A march then is the next day. Obama's appearance will mark only the second time a sitting president has spoken to the Human Rights Campaign. The first time was in 1997 when Bill Clinton spoke to the group. And that was the first time a president, sitting president, had ever addressed a gay rights organization. Obama's speech will coincide with what's being billed as the National Equality March. That's taking place Sunday coming and is expected to draw thousands of gay rights supporters to the National Mall. So look for the viciousness of these right-wing America haters to the tempo of that viciousness to increase now. Because Obama is recognizing the human rights of people who may or may not be gay.
Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
The real reason Barack Obama went to Copenhagen was to, somebody corrected me on that too, was to summon a general. I made a poor joke a minute ago. McChrystal had his ass summoned to Air Force One while it sat on the tarmac. Obama was not interested in going for some goddamn Olympic, it's crazy that the right wingers love that. They're so tiny in their brains. They are so unable to see a bigger picture. They hate America so much that, never mind. But anyway, as reported by the Telegraph of the UK, according to sources close to the administration, McChrystal shocked and angered people within the White House. They're saying presidential advisors, but you can bet your ass the president, too, with the speech he gave in London last week. The next day, he was summoned to an awkward 25-minute face-to-face meeting on board Air Force One on the tarmac in Copenhagen, where the president had gone to, tout Chicago's Olympic bid. Right, that's where I went. Okay, but anyway, as the UK Telegraph says, in an apparent rebuke to the commander, Robert Gates, defense secretary, said, quote, "It is imperative that all of us taking part in these deliberations, civilians and military alike, provide our best advice to the president, candidly but privately." And when asked on CNN, about McChrystal's big goddamn mouth, General Jim Jones, retired national security advisor, said, quote, "Ideally, it's better for military advice to come up through the chain of command," end quote. Asked if the president had told the general to sit down and shut his goddamn mouth, I'm paraphrasing, General Jones told CBS, quote, "I wasn't there, so I can't answer that question, but it was an opportunity for them to get to know each other a little bit better. I'm sure they exchanged direct views," end quote. Well, there's only one direct view from McChrystal, and that is Obama's. And McChrystal better get that through his jar head as quickly as he possibly can. If not, he's going to find his ass unemployed if this president has any a dedication to the chain of command whatsoever, if his life hasn't been threatened. You know, McChrystal is an assassin. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows that he ran, Dick Cheney's hit squads, the special ops organization. I mean, that is the worst kept secret out there. And McChrystal is one of these out of control freaks who thinks, okay, well, you know, the last administration had me go kill people. I can keep doing it. I can mouth off. Who's this guy? He never served in the military. Screw him. I'm the boss. I'm the big man. Got news for you, McChrystal. Shape up, dude. Seriously. An advisor to the Obama administration said, quote, people aren't sure whether McChrystal is being naive or an upstart. Upstart? Upstart? You mean right on the brink of committing treason? Insurrection? Part of McChrystal shooting his mouth off when he was in London, he told the Institute of International and Strategic Studies that the formula, which is favored by Biden, would, quote, lead to, or would lead to, in McChrystal's words, quote, chaosistan, end quote. When asked whether he would support it, he said, short answer is no. I mean, before the order is issued, down through the chain, this rat bastard said, no, short answer is no. I got a short answer for you. Get the hell out of the military. You got your fourth star. Get out. Go play video games, freak. Who do you think you are? Oh, don't answer. I know who you think you are. McChrystal went on to say, quote, waiting does not prolong a favorable outcome. The effort will not remain winnable indefinitely, and nor will public support, end quote. Well, we've seen out-of-control, bloodthirsty commanders like this guy before. In the meantime, under his superior leadership, nine more Americans were killed over the weekend in Afghanistan, right? Well, this freak is in London addressing and shooting his mouth off. His troops are being slaughtered. This guy needs to be removed from office, you know, or from a command. You know it as well as I do. And the question is, why wasn't he? Why wasn't he at this point? This is not, you know, this is not Parcheesi this guy is playing. Well, I just hope somebody in the Obama administration will say to the president, get rid of this guy, get rid of him now. He's right on the verge of challenging your authority, challenging 234 years of military chain of command, civilian control, authority. Get rid of him. Just like Truman had to do with the last guy who thought his fatigues are a little bit bigger than his own ass. It's time to get rid of him, Mr. President. Time to get rid of this guy. He's going to cause an awful lot of people to die. He absolutely cares nothing for human life. I think that's very clear. He's not the type of commander. He's not the type of commander who wants to see his people survive. He's the type of commander who wants to show his ass and make everybody believe that he's a great general. That's the most dangerous kind there is. Get him out of there, Mr. President. Oh, okay, Mike. I'll do it first thing in the morning. Yeah, okay. Moving away from insane people. Got a missive from Prairie 2. Our economics correspondent. Last week I missed a couple of these. And by the way, thanks again to the crew at Green 960 in San Francisco for a great 3 days in that city. Had a good time. A lot of fun. Prairie 2 writes, desperate to stop any new stimulus plan from Obama. The corporate media even dusted off Alan Greenspan for the Sunday talk shows. Greenspan stated emphatically that we should not have any new stimulus plan to create jobs, but we should just extend unemployment benefits instead. His reasoning is that the debt is getting too big. He didn't say where the money will come from for these benefits when no jobs are created. He went on to claim, Greenspan did, that he had always been careful to keep the debt below a level of the GDP that would cause any problems. Really? What caused the mess we are in exactly? The Fed was loaning money at such a low rate that when adjusted for inflation, Greenspan was really paying banks to take the money. Can you say debt bubble? The Republicans, who ran up $12 trillion in debt and underfunded everything for even more trillions, are counting on the Democrats being cowed into not spending any money. It worked with Clinton. So why not just do what Clinton did? Times were great, right? Clinton and Greenspan created a series of bubbles that revolved around trillions of consumer debt while the manufacturing base was sold to China. That trick simply can't be repeated. We're at the bottom of an open grave. More digging won't help. So much money is disappearing, Prairie Two writes, from the economy because of the collapse of the debt bubble that without massive government spending, we would go into an out-of-control deflation spiral consuming our entire economy. The Republicans are whining that Obama is spending so much money that 40% of the GDP is now government spending, and they complain that state and local governments are cutting back at the same time. The implication is, of course, that the federal government is taking over. But Obama's spending has always been quite modest. Most of the so-called stimulus went for tax cuts and bank bailouts, things that the Republicans claim will always fix what ails you. The reality, of course, is that the Republicans have effectively destroyed the economy so that the government is the only thing still working. The GDP is shrinking rather than the government growing. And if the big box stores weren't filled with things we get on credit from China, the damage would be much more apparent. When the Walmart is boarded up like the rest of downtown, people will start to catch on. Greenspan and people he works for did this on purpose. When they started us down this road, there were a few heretics that told us exactly how it would turn out. Welcome to the new plutonomy. The worst is yet to come. Prairie 2, go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. Alan Greenspan. Also tonight, what do we got? The Goldstone, Richard Goldstone report, the report on the Israeli invasion of Gaza is out. It's been out. And just a couple of comments that appeared in The Nation. Robert Reich, the truth about jobs that no one wants to tell. Sounds like Prairie too. And some other things. All right. And we're going to get in next hour probably into the situation in Afghanistan from a couple of different perspectives. So stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy. Sweep the streets I used to own.
Ten before the hour. Danny writes in, you're scaring me with all your gloom and doom talk. I haven't been this scared since I was four, and my older brother told me the boogeyman was going to get me at night. The really scary part is that I feel the same way that you do. And that's why it's really terrifying, because someone is saying out loud what I say in my mind. Hopefully this will all turn out to be unnecessary fear, just like the boogeyman. But I don't think so. Danny. There are scary monsters, just like, what was the little kid's name in Aliens? Remember that? What was that little girl's name? The Sigourney Weaver's character. adopted or took under her wing? Or was that Alien? Was that Alien? That was the first. No, Aliens, the second one. What was that kid's name? Remember when she said about the monsters, about the demons? They come out at night, mostly. That's how I feel about the people who are destroying the country, whether they're in the military or in the financial services industry. Those sons of bitches are starting it again. Have you been reading the business section of the New York Times? It's like reading, I don't know, it's like reading a rap sheet. I read something today about a Simmons mattress company, about, you know, a huge company. I mean, for like how many years? Decades. And how it's been bought and sold, bought and sold, bought and sold. And these companies, these private equity companies, just suck the blood out of it, sell it again, suck the blood out of it. Meanwhile, people are being laid off, lives are being destroyed, and these son of a bitchin' capitalists just keep it up. There's no stopping them. Nothing. Well, there is one thing. Open revolution. That will stop them. Robert Reich, who wasn't he Clinton's Secretary of Labor? You talk about scary stories. He says unemployment will almost certainly be in double digits next year and may remain there for some time. And for every person who shows up as unemployed in the Bureau of Labor Statistics household survey, you can bet there's another, either too discouraged to look for work or working part-time, would rather have a full-time job. Or else someone taking home less pay than before. He writes, parenthetically, I'm in the last category now that the University of California has instituted pay cuts. And there's yet another person who's more fearful that he or she will be the next to lose a job. In other words, 10% unemployment means 20% underemployment or anxious employment, all of which translates directly into late payments on mortgages, credit cards, autos, and student loans, loss of health insurance. It also means sleeplessness for tens of millions of Americans and, of course, fewer purchases. Unemployment of this magnitude, Reich writes, and duration also translates into ugly politics because fear and anxiety are fertile grounds for demagogues wielding the politics of resentment against immigrants and blacks, the poor, government leaders, business leaders, Jews, and other easy targets. It's already started. Next year is a midterm election. Be prepared for worse. Oh, yeah. We've been talking about this, haven't we? So why, Robert Reich writes, is unemployment and underemployment so high, and why is it likely to remain high for some time? Because, as noted, people who are worried about their jobs or have no jobs and who are also trying to get out from under a pile of debt are not going to do a lot of shopping, and businesses that don't have customers aren't going to do a lot of new investing, and foreign nations also suffering high unemployment aren't going to buy a lot of our goods and services. Without customers, companies won't hire. They cut payrolls instead. Which brings us to the obvious question, Reich writes. Who's going to buy the stuff we make or the services we provide and therefore bring jobs back? There's only one buyer left, the government. Let me say this clearly and forcefully as I can. The federal government should be spending even more than it already is on roads and bridges and schools and parks and everything else we need. It should make up for cutbacks at the state level and then some. This is the only way to put Americans back to work. We did it during the Depression. It was called the WPA. Yes, I know our government is already deep in debt, but let me tell you something. When one out of six Americans is unemployed or underemployed, this is no time to worry about the debt. When I was a small boy, my father told me that I and my kids and my grandkids would be paying down the debt created by Franklin Roosevelt during the Depression and World War II. I didn't even know what debt was, but it kept me up at night. My father was right about a lot of things, but he was wrong about this. America paid down FDR's debt in the 50s, when Americans went back to work, when the economy was growing again, when our incomes grew too. We paid taxes, and in a few years, that FDR debt had shrunk to almost nothing. The important thing right now is getting the jobs back and getting the economy growing again. People who now obsess about government debt have it backward. The problem isn't the debt. The problem is just the opposite. It's at a time like this, when consumers and businesses and exports can't do it. Government has to spend more to get us Americans back to work and recharge the economy. Then, after people are working and the economy is growing, then we pay down the debt. But if government doesn't spend more right now and get Americans back to work, we could be out of work for years. And the debt will be with us even longer. And the politics will get much uglier. Yeah, why is that? Why is that so hard? Robert Reich knows it. A lot of you people know it. I know it. Why is this not happening with Barack Obama? Is he as much of a corporatist right winger as the rest of them? Is he? Jesus God, you start to wonder, don't you? What is the problem here? We're not going to make it, or we are going to make it. There's no halfway ground. And the way to make it, the way to get back on track, is massive, massive government infusion, government-created jobs, and money. That's what it's going to take. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program. Thanks for sticking around or just tuning in, whatever the case may be. Chuck Fager is a veteran. Chuck is a combat veteran. You can get information about his organization, QuakerHouse.org. He runs the Quaker House in Fayetteville, North Carolina, Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Chuck Fager. He writes, Mike, apropos the Afghanistan election escalation plans, I reread Kipling's 1899 poem, The White Man's Burden. Much of it still rings eerily true compared to what's being pressed on Obama today. So I prepared this humble update, which is offered herewith. Beneath it are some stanzas of Kipling, which shows his precision even 120 years ago. I'm sorry, shows his prescience 120 years ago and several versions of political correctness later. Let me do Kipling first from The White Man's Burden, 1899. This is just a bit of it. Kipling wrote, take up the white man's burden, send forth the best you breed. Go bind your sons to exile to serve your captives' need. To wait in heavy harness on fluttering folk, on fluttered folk and wild, your new-caught sullen peoples, half devil and half child, take up the white man's burden, the savage wars of peace. Fill full the mouth of famine and bid the sickness cease. And when your goal is nearest, the end for others sought, watch sloth and heathen folly bring all your hopes to naught. Take up the white man's burden and reap his old reward. The blame of those you better, the hate of those you guard. The cry of hosts you humor us slowly toward the light. Why brought us he from bondage, our beloved Egyptian knight? Take up the white man's burden. You dare not stoop to less, nor call too loud on freedom to cloak your weariness. But all you cry or whisper, and all you leave or do, the silent, sullen people shall weigh your gods and you. Here's an update. No more the white man's burden. That phrase won't fly today. It has to be repackaged if we're going to make it play. Let's speak of the imperative and nation-building, too. A bow to 9/11 should help to push it through. Be sure to mention brand-new schools, young girls who shed the veil. The sacred war for hearts and minds. How could we let that fail? The Afghans, they can't help themselves, else they'd be done by now. But Bagram and Guantanamo will help to show them how. So take up Obama's burden. Send your best of every hue to a fruitless war in a distant land. Say they died for me and you. The drone strikes here, the rockets there, the Ranger's slashing blade, the bodies in a village square mark progress that we've made. What if it takes scores of years, a flood of casualties? At tunnel's end, a light will show our exit strategies. We're sure to win this Afghan war. Our generals know it well. But what's the toll, the price tag there? On that, don't ask, don't tell. So fie on the poppy-growing warlord and the scheming Taliban. Where England stumbled, Russia failed, we'll triumph. Yes, we can. Yikes, Chuck. Go to Quakerhouse.org. I hope he's got that posted. With apologies to Kipling, he writes. Quakerhouse.org. It's Chuck Fager, Fayetteville, North Carolina, Fort Bragg. Thanks, Chuck. That's a good one. Yow. I'm going to get a million requests to post it at the website. I can't. We have a webmaster. Go to Chuck's website. I'm sure it'll be there. Phone number here is 877-996-2556 if you want to call in. What else we got? We got a lot of things here. Remember last week I was talking about imprecatory or a couple of, oh, by the way, the little girl in Aliens was named Newt, thanks to Michael. Newt. How could I forget that? A week or so ago, we were talking about imprecatory prayers where you pray for somebody to be burned in hell, which is the new Christian thing to do, I guess. I remember when it was done to me here in Atlanta, when I made the attempt to expose, not just me, but several people, to expose a real predatory bunch of sons of bitches who ran a mega church here. Most of whom are now either dead or the church has been dissolved. They've been sued and resued and caused divorces and got... Oh, it was awful. But back in the 80s, these people here in Atlanta were seen as pillars of the community, and they were swine. And during that period, you know, a couple of the assistant pastors who were boinking anything that walked would send me letters, not emails, letters, no emails back then, and say, "We're going to pray you into hell." You know, my answer was, "Oh, F you, you know, get out of here, you know. You want to do something like that, come on over, come on to the studio. Let's go out and back and settle this like two men." Well, anyway, any of you heard of Mikey Weinstein? I'm sure you have. He's the founder of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. He is a former military lawyer who served in the Reagan White House. He's conservative, Republican. He worked for Ross Perot. He is suing a Dallas-based religious organization in a case that could test the limits of free speech and prayer. Mikey Weinstein said he wants Gordon Klingenschmidt, a former U.S. Navy chaplain, to, quote, "stop asking Jesus to plunder my fields, seize my assets, kill me and my family, then wipe away our descendants for 10 generations, end quote. The suit also asked the court to stop these right-wing Christian nutballs, Klingenschmidt and somebody named Jim Ammerman, who is the founder of the Dallas-based Chaplaincy of Full Gospel Churches. The lawsuit asks that the court to stop them from, quote, encouraging, soliciting, directing, abetting, or attempting to induce others to engage in similar contact, end quote. Mikey Weinstein, who is 54, said his family has received death threats, had a swastika emblazoned on their home in New Mexico, animal carcasses left on their doorstep, and feces thrown at the house. Mikey, I have an idea. I mean, it's nice to go through the courts, but why not just plunk yourself up on the roof of your house with a 50 caliber sniper rifle, and when those sons of bitches come around, pull the trigger after getting a bead on their chest area, and watch the whole upper half of their body just disintegrate. Why not do that, Mikey? Hmm? Mikey Weinstein, who is Jewish, said the harassment started several years ago when he began protesting Christian proselytizing at his alma mater, the Air Force Academy. Weinstein said his foundation shortly after that, or he formed his foundation shortly after that, to battle the influence of extremist evangelical Christians in the armed forces. He says, I morphed from being a lawyer and a businessman into this thing called a civil rights activist. And again, he's an unlikely activist, Weinstein said. He's a Jewish Republican from a long line of military members. This thug Klingenschmidt said in a phone interview that I've never incited anybody to hurt Weinstein. I never prayed for anyone's death. I never prayed for anyone's violence. All I did was quote the scriptures. The other freak, this Ammerman, who's 84 years old, he's a retired Army chaplain, he said in a prepared statement, I believe the allegations are unfounded. Oh, we never did that. Who, us? Prayed him into hell? Wished him dead? No, not us. Yeah. So a lawsuit trying to get these monsters to stop their imprecatory or imprecatory or however you pronounce it, prayers. Wow. We'll be right back. This portion of the Mike Malloy program is brought to you by It's Up to Us Alone, featuring Ed Asner. Go to usalone.com for information on where to hear the debut of this dramatic new radio play in your area. It's about 22 past the hour. Tony's in Parkersburg, West Virginia. Hey, Tony.
Hey, this is Tony. I love your show. It's the first time I've ever heard it tonight.
Well, thank you.
And I agree with a lot, but I'd like to ask one thing. Do we have to have all the vulgarity and using the bad language?
Yeah,
we don't need that.
Yeah, we do.
We do?
Yeah, I've gone through this over and over and over again, Tony, about my language. I'm a potty mouth. I'm ashamed of it, but I'm kind of stuck with it. It's too late for me to ever change. And with all due respect, I just tell people if it's too offensive, that's why you have a dial on your radio. In your case, you're listening to XM, which surprises me. If you listen to XM, you know that the use of language on XM or Sirius can get pretty weird. But you know, if you're offended, I'm sorry.
You're pro-life, aren't you?
I'm sorry.
Aren't you pro-life?
What do you mean, pro-life?
Against abortion.
Well, no, I'm against war. Everyone's against abortion.
Oh, they are?
Well, of course.
Well, how come we have people supporting abortion?
No. Oh, Tony. Nobody supports abortion. What people support is a woman's right to privacy to make decisions with her doctor without people like you sticking your big ass in where it doesn't belong. Go away, Tony. I don't want to talk to you. Get off my program. Get off my program and kiss my butt while you're at it. Just get off my program. Go away. Am I pro-life? Of course I'm pro-life. Always have been. Always will be. And everybody I know who supports Roe v. Wade is pro-life. And everybody I know who is in favor of a woman's right to make her own decisions in the privacy of her own mind with her own doctor is also pro-life. And everybody who want, and was that a topic tonight? How do I pick, you know, am I trolling for freaks tonight? No more freaks. All right? Go listen to shortwave radio tonight. You'll be a lot happier. Get off my program. Diphthong. What do you want to talk about? He wanted to talk about, intercessory prayers or imprecatory. In other words, another one of these goddamn right-wing liars. Jeff is listening in Hollywood, California. Hey, Jeff.
Hollywood, Florida.
Or, I'm sorry, Hollywood, Florida. Okay.
I've spoken to you earlier.
Yeah?
Years ago.
Yeah, I instantly recall that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just wanted to talk about the softening of the general public, their brains. I've been listening to you for years.
Uh-huh.
And I caught you on Ohio and caught the show tonight. And I just wanted to mention, if I could, you've got cop shows.
Yeah.
I believe we're being set up for a police state.
Hey, listen, something's going screwy with your phone, Jeff.
Really?
Have you got me on cell phone?
Absolutely not.
I mean on speakerphone?
No.
No? All right, well, go ahead. It's just getting kind of echoey. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll make it quick. Folks are being softened up for a police state. They even brought out the, acoustic machine?
Yes.
Up to, Pittsburgh?
Yeah, at the G20 meeting.
Right. I spoke to you, I believe last year about Wolf Blitzer.
Okay, yeah.
Now you remember me?
No. A lot of people have talked about Wolf Blitzer, but that's all right. That's okay.
Well, I'd be screened if you remembered me, but it's just getting completely out of hand.
Yeah, it is. Hey, listen, I hate to do this to you, Jeff, but I'm getting just a horrendous feedback from your phone call, and it's making it impossible for people to hear it. I want to hear from you again, but we just can't do it tonight. I appreciate you checking in, though, okay? I hate it when that happens. Jeff, no offense, but I just can't keep the line open when that starts to happen. Oh my God, it drives me and everybody listening to this program crazy. And you know, Jeff, I've only got 37 listeners, so if I start losing them. Antiwar.com had an article a couple of weeks ago. Rick and Mesa sent it to me. Mike, it turns out that the increased U.S. casualties in Afghanistan are due to anti-tank explosives. Yeah, the IEDs. The Taliban and our Director of National Intelligence report that the weapons are coming from Iran. However, the Pentagon reports that these devices were actually supplied by the United States in the 1980s. And he sent me this. I want to share it with you when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Them was a wall.
America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Andrew in New Jersey writes, Mike, don't forget General Stanley McChrystal signed all the documents and awards given Bronze Star to Pat Tillman, provided the cover-up of Tillman's so-called friendly fire death, or to people that looked into it, his murder. This was done with the direct compliance and knowledge of Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld. If you could remind people of his role in this horrible injustice, Andy in Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey. Yeah, there's an awful lot on McChrystal and Gates that we'll be covering tomorrow night. There's some stuff on Gates that I don't think a lot of people are aware of, and, you know, Secretary of Defense. But anyway, this was from antiwar.com. Gareth Porter wrote it. It's a long article. Rick and Mesa sent me just a few excerpts regarding the weaponry being used in Afghanistan, in support of the official U.S. assertion that Iran is arming its sworn enemy, the Taliban. The head of the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, Dennis Blair, has cited a statement by a Taliban commander last year, attributing the Taliban's military success against NATO forces to Iranian military assistance. Now, that's what's out there for you and me to absorb. But this alleged claim by the Taliban is contradicted by evidence from U.S. Defense Department, Canadian forces in Afghanistan, and the Taliban itself, that the increased damage to NATO tanks by Taliban forces has come from anti-tank mines provided by the United States to the jihadi movement in Afghanistan in the 1980s. The Taliban claim was cited by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence in written responses to questions for the record from the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence following testimony by Dennis Blair before the committee last winter. The responses were released by to the Federation of American Scientists under the Freedom of Information Act back in July. A single Taliban commander quoted became plural in the lying Office of the Director of National Intelligence report. The rapid rise in casualties, and remember, we lost 9 soldiers over the weekend. The rapid rise in casualties over the last 2 years is attributed in part to the increased lethality of the Taliban mines. But according to the Pentagon agency responsible for combating roadside bombs in Iraq and Afghanistan, the increased Taliban threat to U.S. and NATO vehicles comes not from any new technology from Iran, but from Italian-made mines left over from the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency's military assistance to the anti-Soviet jihadists of the 1980s. Why, of course. In response to an inquiry from the International Federation of Scientists, it was revealed that these Italian-manufactured TC-6 anti-tank mines are, quote, very common in the Taliban-dominated areas of the country and that they have been modified to increase their lethality in these IED attacks. The TC-6 mines are being, quote, arrayed in 2 or 3 in tandem to ensure the charge is large enough to inflict damage against the coalition vehicles, end quote. It just goes on and on and on. Once again, you know, you can, I wouldn't call that karma. I would just call it another example of U.S. policy back in the '80s in Afghanistan when the great game between the United States and the Soviet Union was still in full play has come back to bite us on the ass and kill our people. This happens all the time. Vietnam. And we've seen this movie. You know, it's called Vietnam. From the Times Online of the UK. Domestic opposition in Afghanistan and the United States. Domestic opposition to U.S. surge is increasing. About 400 coalition troops have been killed in Afghanistan this year, the majority of them American. And the death toll this weekend was the highest suffered by NATO's International Security Assistance Force since August 2008, when 10 French troops died in an ambush. It was also the highest inflicted on U.S. troops in Afghanistan since 200 insurgents killed 9 Americans in an attack on another remote outpost in July last year. Wow. 9 dead this weekend, and this out-of-control General Stanley McChrystal, who apparently is turning into Colonel Kurtz from Apocalypse Now and Heart of Darkness, just somebody who has decided, well, he's going to do it his way, and the Obama administration seems to be allowing that to happen. I don't know. He was, he was summoned to. And again, you know, when the right wing talks about Obama went to Copenhagen to talk about the Olympics, they're crazier. They're crazier in hell. He went there because he's got an out-of-control commander, supreme commander, in Afghanistan over U.S. and NATO troops, who is making statements to the press saying, well, any deviation from a full scale assault with increased troops is one that's not going to work, and I'm against it. Would you support a less of a commitment? Nope. In a quick answer, no. One word answer, no. I mean, who in the hell is this guy? Well, we know who he is. He's an assassin. He's a former head of the Joint Special Ops. Jesus. Dave is in Harrisburg, PA. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Mike. I had originally called in because I wanted to talk about the fact that apparently someone's being persecuted prosecuted in Pittsburgh for using Twitter to let people know where the police were. A previous caller started talking about things in a police state, and I just thought that was kind of ironic. I heard that on the news today.
How can you prosecute somebody for using Twitter?
Apparently, they said he's using a telecommunications network for illegal activities.
Oh, wait a minute. That's right. Back during the Bush years, and they haven't been rescinded yet, all sorts of laws were passed that could be construed that if you let people know where the police are massing, you can be charged with under terrorism laws. Yeah, that's right. I forgot.
Yeah, but that's one of those things that we were terrified and flushed away.
Yeah.
To hurry and do it. As you were talking about some of the minds that we have left over, I guess we just train them and leave the minds hang out there. Kill our soldiers later. We train them how to kill our soldiers, and then when we disagree with them, we send our soldiers back.
Right.
So that make sure we have lots of, I don't know. I guess the Carlisle Group, I don't know if their stock bleeds. But it probably should.
Yeah.
Periodically, it should be like, I have a picture of Mary and its eyes bleed occasionally. Well, my child stock bleeds all the time.
Yeah, I hear you.
So it's just amazing to me. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
I sent in a piece last week about the, and I didn't know if you'd gotten to it yet, about the raid on the club in Atlanta.
Yes.
Okay.
The gay club in Atlanta. Yeah. The cover story was. Let me put you on hold because you're starting to fade a bit, Dave. The cover story on the raid on this gay club in Atlanta. I think it was about 10 days ago. Was that drugs and illicit sex were both occurring in the club? That's the cover story put out by the police department. The people who were there. Who were beaten and pushed around and kicked and stomped and hauled off in paddy wagons. Yeah, we still have paddy wagons in Atlanta. Say it's a different story altogether, that it is, you know, once again, you know, the bad old days. It's okay to attack gay people. It's okay to beat them up. It's okay to deny them the same kinds of legal protections as other people. It's okay to deny them civil rights or the ability to write a contract regarding marriage. This is another example of the religious right. Even though Atlanta happens to be a city that is pretty much governed by African Americans, it is still the South. It is still an area of the country where these anti-gay attitudes are very, very strong, still very strong. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It's 10 before the hour. Got an email here from Logan. Writes, regarding VA care and post-traumatic stress disorder we talked about last week, Logan writes, once again, Mike, you're spot on with your assessment of the veterans with PTSD in the VA system. As a former Marine who had served not long ago, I'm one of those that returned with PTSD and service aggravated manic depression. 4 years had passed before I actually went for help. In that time, I found a wonderful escape in illegal drugs and plenty of alcohol. The nightmares left me sleepless for many nights. Socially, I could not connect with the world back in the States, and I was very angry. The guilt and the feeling of being a pawn in a sick game of chess left me in an extremely deep depression for months. My suicide ideation had my head spinning, looking for a way out. Although I never ended up on the wrong side of the law, many of my friends at the VA had. The process to get help is not a seamless one. Although immediate help is available, it is never mentioned as an option upon release from the service. As a Marine, you don't go to sick bay unless you are dead. Many soldiers lie on their paperwork to save the ridicule and further delays from getting the hell out of hell. To go for help is a sign of weakness, so the brainwashing went. A year after applying for disability, I finally got appointments for help. They are so backlogged here in Oregon, there's only enough help for one appointment a month. It is a frustrating process that some give up on. All I can say is the folks at the VA try their best, but they're burned out, and the wave hasn't hit yet. We will face these problems of vets with PTSD and other war-related mental issues for many years to come. Thanks for the great show, Logan. And McChrystal and Gates and whoever, and apparently Barack Obama, want to increase that flow of mind-damaged veterans coming back from a war zone that we have no business being in. I wish there was some way that somebody with understanding that we are going to have our asses kicked in a more severe way than we did in Vietnam, if we continue this madness in Afghanistan, we'll be able to inflict lots of death, just like we did in Southeast Asia. We lost 58,000 dead, but we killed 3 million. And a lot of people, like probably General Stanley McChrystal, would say that's a pretty good kill ratio, don't you think, boys? What is that? 40 to 1? 50 to 1? That ain't bad. I think it's clear that McChrystal is a war lover, and the person deciding on the ground military strategies and tactics should not, should it, be a war lover. Jonathan is in Malvern, PA. Hey, John. Jonathan.
Hey, you are totally awesome. I just wanted to say, I just don't understand why McChrystal, if he did subvert the chain of command, then why would he need to do that in addition to giving press releases?
I'm sorry. What's the question, Jonathan? I mean,
well, I think a lot of people are focusing on whether or not there was a leak, and I think that's not the important question to ask. I think the important question to focus on is why he might feel so inept as to need to subvert the chain of command.
Oh, McChrystal?
Yeah.
Well, no, I think he feels like he has the power, that he can do whatever he damn well pleases. I don't think it's because he's inept. I think it's because he's an out-of-control war lover who sees Barack Obama as some kind of a fruitcake or less, who has no business being commander-in-chief because, first of all, he'd never served in the military, and second, well, you know, he's not white like real military commanders are. And McChrystal is crazy. I mean, this is a guy who got his fourth star because he did the bidding of Dick Cheney, and the bidding of Dick Cheney was to go murder people, summary executions, hunt them down, don't bring them in, don't question them, just torture them and kill them. Go into areas where we are not known to have a force of soldiers. Just go kill people, and do it quietly and expeditiously, and use whatever you want. Use Blackwater. Use as much money as you want. Use whatever hidden operations you want to use. Do it. The more I read about McChrystal, the more I'm becoming aware that this guy is you know, like I said earlier, he is a carbon copy of Colonel Kurtz from Apocalypse Now. He's just, you remember the movie, and if you read the book, Heart of Darkness. His attitude is that the people back home don't know what they're doing, which may be true, but in a reverse sense from what McChrystal is saying. And McChrystal apparently wants, 300,000-400,000 people, in uniform, killing and being killed, in a country that has zero strategic value to the security of America. It has a lot of strategic value to corporate America, but zero strategic value to the security of America. But that's not the issue. It hasn't been the issue since World War II. How was Vietnam a threat? How was the revolution in Nicaragua a threat? How was Cuba a threat? How was Panama a threat? Or the Dominican Republic? How were they a threat? How was Lebanon a threat? You know, the quick answer is they weren't. But they were of strategic importance to corporate, not just corporate America, but global corporatism. And if it means sending American soldiers to go die for corporate America, what's the problem, Malloy? What's the problem? What's the problem? That's what we've been doing since 1950, since the Korean War. So what's the problem? We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program. Thanks for sticking around or for tuning in. Oh, hello. There's San Francisco. Couple of quick emails, then back to your phone calls. The number here is 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. We're taking calls tonight, so I know a lot of times you send me emails. Well, I couldn't get through. Okay, now's your chance, all right? Mike writes in, McChrystal is right on. I call for universal conscription to fight the terrorists. Everyone over 45, including congressmen, congresswomen, parents, women, Christians, right-wing talking heads, everyone. Okay. Sure, why not? Yeah, conscription is absolutely necessary if you want to stop war. And see, the Pentagon knows this. That's why we do not have the draft. Right? Roz writes in, Mike, what do you think of Peter Galbraith being fired by the UN for saying that the elections in Afghanistan were crooked? Galbraith was connected to the U.S. Embassy in or the UN in Afghanistan, right? Okay. He said the Afghanistan elections were crooked. The UN knows what has been going on, but is sweeping it under the rug. Lots of deceit going around. The whole world seems to be wandering around in a thick fog. Nobody knows what the hell is going on. Is all this mayhem and bringing down of the United States part of a larger global plan? Other countries are being sunk economically, too. It does make you wonder what the hell or what the end of all this will be. As for Obama, it would be very easy for him to meet the same end as other leaders did in the past, if you catch my drift. Umpteenth lunatics with a cause have not been created. They can be blamed for any mishap that may occur in the future. It's almost as though the groundwork is being laid so that a legitimate reason for this will exist. Yeah, and we've talked about that many times. There's a strong effort. Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Crazy Eyes, Michelle Malkin, Michael Savage, the rest of these people, they want Obama assassinated. They want race war. They want death and destruction in this country. That's why these roach son of a bitches sit there and applaud when the IOC gives the Olympics to Rio de Janeiro as if that's a defeat for Obama. And what the dumbasses don't realize, Obama was no more in Copenhagen to talk about the Olympics than he was there to play tiddlywinks. He was there to have a sit-down with McChrystal. And we don't know what the outcome of that sit-down is going to be yet, do we? But to the right-wingers that hate this country, and who want to see it defeated, who want to see race war, who want to see class war, who want to see every single patchwork in this social fabric that we've stitched together for the past 75 years, they want to see it ripped to pieces. What they want is neo-feudalism, where you have the absolute rich and the absolute rest of everybody else. Well, again, to the employees of the Weekly Standard who applauded, to all of you right-wing worms, I look for the day when you are confronted with a horrific medical tragedy in your family and you don't have the insurance or the money to pay for it. And therefore your granny or your auntie or your brother or your cousin or whoever it is, or you, can't get the care that you need and you die. And I want you to remember as you suck in your last death rattle that it was you, you dumbass, who stood out in the rain with Glenn Beck urging you on, demanding, you teabagging freak, that there be no health care because it was communism. So as you're laying there in your hospital bed dying, think about that, dummy. You could have lived a little bit longer. You could have seen your grandchildren get a little bit older, right? You could have collected a little bit more of that Social Security. Oh, and one more thing. The second thought is you suck in your last death rattle breath. I want you to remember Sarah Palin telling everybody about the death panels. Huh? Miserable bastards. Man. One more email and then back to your phone calls. God, these people piss me off. This is from Steve. He said this to me some time ago, and I just never got to it. Steve is in Santa Clarita, California. Hi, Mike. Last night I had an experience with one of these right-wing pigs you talk about on your show. I have a public gym at my apartment complex where I live, and I went down there to work out as usual. When I got there, there was a guy sitting on one of the benches watching Bill O'Reilly on the Fox Noise channel. As I was getting ready to warm up, Bill O started in on one of his intolerant hate speech rants, and I was very offended by it. I went up to the guy, who wasn't even working out, by the way, and said to him, "Excuse me, sir, could we find something else to watch? I really don't want to listen to Bill O'Reilly while I work out." He asked me if it was offensive to me, and I said, "Yes." He then said that that was too bad, and that he liked it, and it was great. I then tried to reason further with him by asking if we could find some sort of compromise, find something we could both watch, or maybe turn off the TV if we couldn't come to a compromise. The guy then dismissed me, told me to get out of his face and to beat it. I reminded him this was a public gym and that I had as much right to be there as he did. I then walked away and began my warm-up. He started to taunt me by coming over and changing the channel briefly, which I was going to thank him for doing, and then just changing right back to Fox News and leaving the remote near the treadmill where I was working out. After I finished my warm-up, the guy was still sitting there on the bench, not working out, just watching the garbage. I then suggested that if he wasn't working out, then maybe he'd go back to his apartment and watch TV. He made another rude gesture and dismissed me again. I then took the clicker, which he left near me, and turned off the TV. This guy turned around, ran full speed from across the room, and tried to jump me. I pushed him away, but he came at me again. I think I tapped him in the chest with my foot and told him if he attacked me again, I was going to kick his ass. He then ran out, saying I had assaulted him and he was going to call the police. Being a black belt, I think, if anything, I showed restraint by only pushing him back while having someone run at me full speed without knowing their intentions. I have every right to defend myself in that situation. You can't reason with these people who have completely lost their minds in their rage over having Barack Obama in the White House and having been spun up further by propaganda and lies by right-wing pundits. I just wanted to share the story with you and your listeners so that they can take care and watch out for these nut jobs. I hope you're well, Mike. Big fan, Steve, and his last name, Santa Clarita. You got to respect that, don't you? I mean, if I were in a situation that Steve would have been in, I would have been inclined, to jump. But I don't have a black belt in any self-defense discipline. If you do have that, you don't waste it on punk asses like this. You wait until they make a move and then just redirect their negative energy. Hopefully right back into them. But I kind of admire that. Way to go, Steve. Way to go. To be able to walk away from somebody acting like that, I really do admire that. I really do. I wish I could do that. Ah, my goodness. Warren is in Revere, Massachusetts, listening on Sirius. Hey, Warren.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
I was wondering if you had heard anything about Senator Jim DeMint from South Carolina going down to Honduras to with the leaders of the fascist coup down there?
Yeah, this is another Republican way of sticking a finger in Barack Obama's eye. The government that has been put in place in that military takeover is not recognized by the United States. DeMint is the type of person who, if somebody went to visit Castro, you see, he would go out of his goddamn mind. But you see, Castro's a commie, whereas this the guy that took over in Honduras is a thug backed by the military. So it's typical. Don't forget, this is South Carolina. Let me put you on hold. We'll come back after the break, Warren. This is South Carolina this guy is from. South Carolina is, I've said before, when they give the world an enema, that's where they put the tube. Some of them want to be abused.
Everybody's looking for something.
truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
Look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it. Play the guitar on the MTV.
It is 21 past the hour. We were talking with Warren in Revere, Massachusetts. Yeah, Senator DeMint is, he's from South Carolina, which should speak volumes, right?
Yeah, isn't that a state where they like to beat their children in school and stuff, corporal punishment and all that?
That's among the lesser of the insanities that go on in that state. But yeah, not that beating children in school is...
A good thing.
Is not an actionable offense, right? But yeah, all of this is done to poke a finger in Barack Obama's eye because he's not supposed to be the president. Only white people are supposed to be president, and this is the same same group that even McCain wasn't acceptable because McCain and his wife had adopted a non-white child. And, you know, it's South Carolina. It's just like, what's his name said in the movie Chinatown? Jake, don't worry about it. It's Chinatown.
Yeah. Well, he's also one of the people who, was the leader of this whole teabagger movement as far as like, setting up the website, telling them where to go and how to go and what to say and what to do and how to yell people down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Insane. Just absolutely insane.
Aren't these cool leaders in Honduras? Alumni of the School of the Americas also?
Yeah, some of them are. Most of the right-wing dictatorships in Central America for the past 60 years have been, and the death squads and the torturers and the people that do the disappearances have been trained at the School of the Americas.
Yeah, you think they might want to try to, you know, kind of send our president a message?
Yeah. Yeah,
you ever wonder if he hasn't been taken into a room somewhere and showed horrible video footage and
we've talked about that. I would not be the least bit surprised. I would not be surprised. We're just a matter of millimeters from losing the entire republic to the corporatists, and I wouldn't be surprised if Barack Obama has been reminded that he has. A family that he needs to think about and that his behavior will determine the safety of that family. This is the United States of America. We're an international pariah, and we have at the core of our government the CIA, which is the most corrupt terrorist organization in the history of civilized human beings. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not surprised at too much of anything anymore, Warren. Are you?
No, not at all.
I hear you. All right. Thanks, Warren. I appreciate you checking in. Oh, man. Nerman is in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on XM.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. How are you?
It's really a pleasure to talk to you.
All mine.
I'm born in Bosnia. I grew up in Bosnia. And the reason why I'm calling you tonight is that I live in the United States about 14 years. I become a U.S. citizen. And if you remember the days when Clinton was president back in the 90s, there was a bad, bad civil war in that part of the world. I was there from the first to the last day, and the symptoms that I'm seeing in this country are the same symptoms that I saw that I saw in back in Bosnia. I'm talking about problems with the economy, loss of jobs, problems with the banks, politicians don't get along, all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. And there is a few things that's left, and if you see those things, then you need to know that the party is on. I'm talking about the long lines from the gas stations, the long lines from the grocery stores.
Right.
If you don't receive your paycheck next week, you know that's time to pack your stuff and maybe do something about it. What our president told us is, hey, people, go sleep. For the war, we need a two sides. If they want to be one side, we're not going to be the other side.
Mm-hmm.
That was ridiculous because if they slap you a few times in the face, you ain't the game. And that's how we end up in a war. Everybody was pumped out. Let's get it on. Like you said, you know it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And after 2-3 months, all those killings, destructions, loss of family members, friends, dead children on the streets killed by sniper shootings and all of that, people realized, if this is what we want, but it was too late, game was on. Politicians flew the country, and people were stuck in that part of the world to deal with the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm scared, to be honest with you. I'm not ready for the second war. I'm really scared of that. And like I said, the symptoms that I saw there, believe me, Mike, maybe you can be skeptic, but the same symptoms are here right now.
Well, I'm not a skeptic, Nerman, and it must be hell for somebody like you that lived in a country that has gone through this and to see it developing in the great, by God, United States of America. Nerman, thanks for checking in, man. I appreciate it. I think about that a lot. I'm glad Nerman called in. I think about people who have, I've talked to people who lived in Russia at various times during a dictatorship and who watched the lies perpetrated by the state. The surveillance, the disappearances, just like we had under Bush and Cheney for 8 years. And their sentiment is about the same. You know, I really feel for you Americans. I have been through this. And I hate to see it happening again in my adopted country. I don't know, man. I'm spooky. We'll be back. I'm Mike Molloy.
Ready to make nice, it's Mike Molloy.
Twenty-five before the hour, according to the British press, New York-based anarchist has been arrested by the FBI and charged with hindering prosecution after he allegedly used the social networking site Twitter to help protesters at the G20 summit in Pittsburgh evade the police. This is what the caller mentioned earlier tonight. The one guy is 41 years old from Queens, had his home raided, and was released on $30,000 bail after he and the other guy, who were 46, were tracked to a motel in Pittsburgh during the summit. A couple of weeks ago, the pair were found sitting in front of a bank of laptops and emergency frequency radio scanners. They were wearing headphones and microphones and had mini maps and contact numbers in the room. Official police documents allege the two men used Twitter messages to contact protesters at the summit, quote, and to inform the protesters and groups of the movements and actions of law enforcement, end quote. The FBI said that as well as the computers and radio scanning equipment discovered at the hotel, they also confiscated from the one guy's home 11 gas masks, 5 pairs of goggles, and test tubes and beakers. They said they also took away anarchist books and pictures of Marx and Lenin. The one guy's a social worker with a Manhattan-based program attached to a psychiatric hospital. He's said to be a member of the People's Law Collective, a voluntary group that advises protesters on legal issues arising from protest actions. And the other guy produces a talk show and radio called This Week in Radical History. Well, there you go. That's kind of scary, isn't it? Of course, Twitter and Facebook and so on and so forth is usually what oppressed people use in societies that have these networks set up, these computer networks set up. And usually it's someplace in Asia or Central or South America. Here it is in the United States. Well, very simple, the way we handle it in the United States, we arrest people who use a means of communication. The problem with these guys were they were not in a First Amendment zone. That's the problem, right? They had rented a hotel room, and they were notifying protesters of movements of the police so that the protesters wouldn't be given aneurysms and have their eardrums broken by the audio weapons that these sons of bitches now use. So there you go. It's a crime to use Twitter, you see, to let protesters know where the police are moving. Can't do that. The job of law enforcement, the militarized law enforcement in this country, certainly in Pittsburgh, is to prevent the use of the First Amendment, to prevent it, to absolutely goddamn suppress it, and eventually to burn it out of the Constitution. First Amendment, my ass, get rid of it. And the Fifth. And eventually, you right-wing freaks, the Second. Bush made a stab at it. Where were you bastards then? How come you didn't protest? See, here I go again. I'm going to get real angry about that one. But First Amendment rights, look. This is the United States of, by God, America, the year of our dear sweet Jesus, 2009. If you want to protest, punk, go to a protest zone. You can wear your little black blue jeans and your black T-shirt and hold up your copy of the Anarchist Cookbook in a First Amendment zone. We catch you outside of that zone, we're going to bust your ass. You live in the United States of Fascist America. Oops, a little premature for that. United States of America. Busting people for notifying their comrades. Supposing they had used just cell phones. Supposing they would have been sitting on the tops of buildings in downtown Pittsburgh talking to people on a cell phone. Okay, they're moving down Price Avenue now. The cops are turning left on First Street. You guys over there on Fourth, move over a block. Would that have been a crime? Would that have been a chargeable offense that requires $30,000 to bail out? How many Catholic priests had to pay $30,000 bond in Pittsburgh after they buggered little children? Huh? Oh, excuse me. That's right. That's religion. I don't even want to read the rest of the story. It just is, it's infuriating. Just infuriating. Jasper's in Memphis, Tennessee. Hey, Jasper.
How you doing, mate?
I'm all right. How are you?
All right. I got a couple of things here. Right quick, I'm going to get them off my mind.
Go ahead.
I don't want to talk about them.
Go ahead.
Now, when Obama got elected, you know, he should have cleaned the White House with a broom and got all them damn Republicans out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Especially those Republican generals he got.
Yeah.
He's got a McChrystal over there. Talking in England, wide open, which is against military rule.
Mm-hmm.
I got 22 years of military.
Mm-hmm.
And the same time that he over there talking against him, that he got guys over there in position that's undefendable in those low parts over in Afghanistan.
That's right.
And he's really, Mike, right now, man, he's really beginning to piss me off, man. Because every time you turn around, he's always pointing a Republican. He needs to start appointing some of the Democratic generals in there. Then he'll have a good opinion on how to win this war.
I hear you.
And I'm just about tired of his naivety, you know. He's so smart. To me, Hillary said that when it comes time to take a hard decision, you guys better look for it. And now I know exactly what she's talking about. That's all I got to say.
Okay. Thank you, Jasper. I appreciate it. Barbara is in San Rafael, California. Hey, Barbara.
Hi, Mike. I saw you at Yoshi's a little while back.
Oh, yeah, last week. How are you?
I'm fine. It was a great show.
Well, I had a good time. I hope everybody else did.
Oh, gosh, yeah. We didn't want it to end.
Well,
just go on long enough.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I remember standing up there and saying, hey, well, I'm willing to keep going. And somebody said, no, we got to go home. Oh, okay. All right. Whatever.
I know.
Right.
Oh, well. But, you know, I wanted to talk to you and ask your opinion on something.
Sure.
I was listening to Tom Hartman this morning, and he had said something that really struck me. He said that a lot of these people, you know, right-wingers have, you know, read and follow Ayn Rand's philosophies.
Right.
And he said that, you know, she came from, you know, communist USSR,
mm-hmm.
where their politics and their government were one, in that it was communism.
Mm-hmm.
And so when she came here, she thought that our government and our politics were capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And that, so she came with that mindset, which was completely wrong.
Right.
And then these other people just kind of glommed onto her for their, you know, their own reasons. And It really struck me. I wondered what you think about that.
Well, I agree pretty much. When Tom Hartman decides to hold forth on a topic, you can bet your boots that Hartman has research and knows what he's talking about. Whereas when you listen to this program, you get a lot of opinion. But with Hartman, you get a lot of fact.
Educated opinion.
Yeah, well, there you go. But Ayn Rand is a Jewish Russian who came to this country. Who comes from a totalitarian form of government, and who I think ran politics are just as totalitarian. When they were transferred here, she likes to, her characters in Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead are characters that, you know, struggle against the state, and the state is seen as a corrupt institution. True, where she came from, but the state in this country, when she got here, it was not that far removed, was it, from the New Deal era, from the time when a social fabric was being put together. Ayn Rand is a social Darwinist, like a lot of Republicans in the United States. If you can't make it on your own, they like to believe, then to hell with you, you deserve to be kicked to the curb. And the weird part is nobody in this country has ever made it on their own. I defy anyone to name anyone in the past 150 years in this country who has, quote, made it on their own. So if it's on Hartman's program, you can, and it's being presented as fact, you can pretty well be sure that it is.
Yeah.
Don't you agree?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I listen to him, I listen to you,
right.
You know, but I just wondered what is her appeal. I mean, you know,
her appeal is selfishness and greed.
Yeah,
that's it. I mean, Ayn Rand represents the highest level of greed justified, selfishness justified, greed and selfishness almost raised to a religious form. And I think it comes from her deprived background. But she defines greed and gimme and to hell with you.
Right. Yes. Well, thank you, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right. Good to hear from you.
When are you coming back to San Francisco?
Probably not for a year.
Okay.
Thanks, Barbara. I appreciate it. Unless the power at Green 960, and that would be John Scott, if he decides to have me back. Oh, I don't think I thanked Brad Friedman, did I, for sitting in for me last Wednesday night. Thank you, Brad. I didn't say anything. I didn't say anything Thursday. Oh my God. I wonder what sort of news he broke last Wednesday. Brad Friedman always takes this program into the international arena. After Brad Friedman sits in, somebody will send me a link from the press in South Asia or Central America or South America. There it is. Brad Friedman on the Mike Malloy Show. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Thanks for our crew. Technical advisor is Ben Birch. Our military affairs correspondent is Sharon Gordy. Brusenberg is our economic affairs correspondent. Kate Petrini, educational affairs. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, the program's ethics advisors. This program is engineered and produced by Kathy Bay. Back to your phone calls. Kevin is in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Kevin.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Yeah, I just want to say, I think a lot of things like Barack Obama is doing, I think he's going to pull out the ultimate wild card and just run it through the Senate at midnight.
You think?
Well, I pray. You know, put some positive energy, because the thing is, they're already promoting what a Hitler he is, and according to them, he's a Hitler Stalinist, which to me is a total oxymoron.
Yeah, well, which shows you the relative intelligence level of your typical teabagger who doesn't understand left from right, up for down, wouldn't be able to tell you anything regarding history of any of these isms, any more than they could tell you any history regarding their holy book. They're crazy.
Yeah. And the proper term for the Iron Man is Calvinism, which is the idea of God likes me more than everybody else.
Is that what Calvinism is?
Yeah.
God likes me more than anyone else?
I can do whatever the hell I want.
I haven't heard Calvinism defined that way, but that's pretty good.
Well, that's what it is. Well, think about it. You know, when the people came off the Mayflower and after the Indians fed them, what did they do to the Indians?
Yeah, well, that's true too, isn't it? God. All right. Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate you checking in, man.
Okay, brother.
Take care. We have a teabagger here? Stefan is in Harrisburg, PA.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Stefan. You're a teabagger. What does that mean?
No, I'm a conservative, and I like to respond to one of you know.
Well, you told Kathy a teabagger. I'm just curious. How do you define that?
Well, I'm against the government-run health care.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Because I came to the United States from a socialist paradise, Europe.
No. I appreciate your background, but you're not there anymore. You're here. Do you have old people in your family in this country?
No.
Do you plan on getting old, or do you plan? No. Well, hold on. I'm trying to understand you. Don't make it difficult. Do you plan on getting old, or are you going to die young?
Obviously, I'm planning on getting old.
Okay. Do you want to have Medicare and Social Security when you get old?
Well, if it's
going to
be there.
Oh, no. Don't give me that weasel word attitude. Do you want it or don't you?
I'm going to say yes.
But you're a teabagger. You don't want government health care.
I understand that.
Well, now, wait a second. You're defining yourself as a hypocrite. It's either wait a second, Stefan. No, this is my program. You answer my questions. You told my producer you're a teabagger. I want to know why you are. And all of a sudden you make it clear. You're a hypocrite.
Well, I'm paying into the system for 20 years.
So what?
I like to
You can refuse it. Stand on your principles and refuse it when it's your turn. Yeah, well, that's the second time you laugh. What the hell does the laugh mean? What else do you do, teabagger, that shows your independence from the socialism that this great commie is in putting on this country? What else do you refuse to accept? Let me ask you something, teabagger. What happens if you need a cop? What are you going to do? You're going to call a private law enforcement agency? What are you going to do?
Well, that is obviously a role.
Oh, no kidding. You're going to call a cop. If somebody is in the street beating your ass, you're going to call a cop, right? That's socialism, Stefan. What are you going to do if your house is on fire, Stefan?
It is in a constitution.
Hey, Stefan. Yo, Stefan. Yeah. What are you going to do if your house is burning down? Who are you going to call? You going to call Rush Limbaugh?
Oh,
get off my goddamn program. Go away. Jesus Christ, I'm a teabagger. Oh, really? Why is that? Well, I'm also a hypocrite. I come from a socialist paradise. Yeah, well, go home. You know, get out of my country. What are you doing coming to my country for and making that kind of noise, you know? Go home. Nobody wants you here. Get the hell out of here. Go away. Go back home and agitate. Go back home and hold up a tea bag. What do you suppose would have happened then? Somebody would have put a bullet through your forehead. That's what would have happened. Goddamn freaks. I'm a tea bagger. Why is that? You're going to accept Social Security when you get old? Oh, really? Okay. They irritate me. I don't have any patience for this, you know. Just like the guy called earlier said, well, you must be pro-life. Yeah, I am. Sure. That means no war. And I got an email right away. Somebody said, well, why didn't you talk to him a little bit longer? Because I don't like that kind of ignorance. It's like sticky. You get around that kind of ignorance and it gets on you. And it sticks and you try to wash it off and it won't come off. And you gotta get some kind of a solvent, like gasoline or something, and to get it off you. You know, these sticky right wingers. It's nasty and it's smelly. I don't like to be around them. Is that graphic enough? I don't like them calling my program either. So are you gonna use Social Security when you get old? Ha 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 ha. What do you do if you want a cop? Ha 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 ha. God. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. I'm Mike Molloy. Keep it lit.
Felix.